Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. Today we have an author interview with Kia Brown. Kia Brown is the creator of Disable and Cute hashtag. She's the published author of the memoir, The Pretty One. In this episode, we chat about her writing process, what it was like to have a viral hashtag, and of course, a round of book recommendations. Now let's get to the show. Hi, Kia. Welcome to What You Read Next podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited for this conversation.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am a writer and a journalist, and I focus on identity, pop culture, and I do specialize in profiles. And I feel very lucky because I get to do both of the things that I love, and that's writing, you know, nonfiction and fiction, but also being able to talk to people about the things that they love and what makes them exactly who they are. So I feel very lucky, and I love what I do. But I'm also a cheesecake connoisseur, and I love pizza and cheeseburgers and all those good things. So I feel like I kind of run the gamut. I'm the kind of person that, like, is obsessed with music and good, greasy food, but also will, you know, be the writer and the journalist who digs deeper than a lot of people are expecting when they look at me.
I love it. So I got a question. What's your favorite cheesecake topping?
My favorite cheesecake topping. I like the turtle cheesecake.
Okay.
So that has, like, the caramel on it. There's some chocolate in it. So I love the turtle cheesecake, but I don't say no to plain or strawberry topping.
Okay. I like it. So I got a question. Also, how did you become a journalist? Like, did you go to school for it? Or was it something you did? Oh, okay. Great.
Yeah, I went to a college called SUNY Fredonia, and I graduated with a degree in journalism in 2013 and a minor in creative writing because I knew that I wanted to do both. But I knew first that, like, journalism was really going to be, you know, my career. But I didn't realize that you could have more than one. You could do more than one thing in your career. So I got a degree in journalism in 2013, and then I started with an internship at a website called Cliche Magazine. And that was really cool because it was a remote position. So I could do it from home where I'm based in Western New York. And I just really got to talk to a lot of people that I, you know, admire and whose TV shows and movies I love. And so I've tried really hard to, like, dig a little deeper in your standard, you know, celebrity question. It's like, how is it to get into character? Because I think those are important. But I also think that, like, for me, I really liked that I was able to go a little deeper and ask some questions that they had not been able to be asked before. People just didn't really think about in terms of the process of characterization. And so I think I took that into, you know, this book and my nonfiction and fiction itself. Mm-hmm. Because I was, okay, my whole goal is to dig a little deeper. And I think that we could absolutely use more of that. In all genres.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that you went deeper. Like, it wasn't a surface level, like, memoir, essays, where you just basically, you know, you share your life and you know how great things are. You actually went there. You share about your family, you share about friendships, you share about your disability, you share about race, mm-hmm. you talk about the real issues that are at stake in 2019. And that shows in the work that you did.
Okay, thank you. That means a lot to me. I mean, that was the goal. I absolutely tried to make sure that I was, like, covering the things that mattered to me, but doing so in a way that felt authentic to who I am as a person and as a writer and journalist. So I really did work hard to make sure that I was, like, talking about things that mattered to me and not feeling like I had to do certain things or say certain things in order for the book to be what it is. So I felt really good that I had that like ability from my team and like my editor and my agent to just tell the stories I wanted to tell.
I love it. That's really great to hear. So you created our hashtag Disabling Cute. What inspired you to put it out there into the universe?
I mean, really, it was for me at first. I just wanted to celebrate myself and finally feeling good in my own body. And then I was like, well, this would be a great way to, you know, remember that by posting these pictures and sharing this hashtag. And I really wanted people to join in, but I wasn't expecting them to. You know, I tweet a lot. I'm a very prolific tweeter. But I think with this, it was like I posted these four pictures and the hashtag Disabled and Cute because I wanted to celebrate feeling good. And I said to other people, you know, if you want to join in, use the hashtag. And like, that would be great. And I left because I was on deadline, as a writer often is. And I came back and it was trending. And then by the end of the week, we went viral. And then by the middle of next week, we were like global. So it was really cool to see something that initially began as a way for me to celebrate myself, become a place for community and for people to feel like they can celebrate themselves and each other as well.
I love it. I love the tone that it was actually, it's about self-love and self-care. And it's about feeling good around your body and feeling good where you are, as opposed to
you know,
the aspiration or the expectations the society tells us that we should be doing. That it came from a place of love, as opposed to a place of hate or a place of anger. It's like a place of a good spot to bring in.
And I didn't want people to feel like they had to be at that same place that I was at, because I feel like self-love is a journey and it's an everyday thing that we have to work at. And I understand that there are so many people who are trying so hard every day, but they're just not there yet. And I felt like I wanted people to know that, like, this is for you too. You know, this is about your journey as much as it is mine. And you can use the hashtag when you feel ready, and you can just go in there and, you know, linger and hang out and see what other people are saying and doing, and, you know, what they're tweeting or what they're posting picture-wise. And I just want people to be like, this is a place for me to be exactly who I am, even if I'm not sure that I like that person yet.
Yeah. So let's talk about your journey of self-love, because that's where it came from, Ben, and it was far from linear. So can you tell us a little bit about how did you get to that place where you feel comfortable enough to put yourself as disabled and cute, but then, you know, to just be able to be in this place where you share your bug, where you're in a good space?
Yeah, I mean, it took a while. I'm 27, so I guess not a while, right? I'm not older than I actually am. But it took me over half my life, because when I would look at, you know, these things that I love, like pop culture and film and TV, I would see disabled people in only negative ways. We'd always be killed before the end of the movie or the TV show, and we would always have to sacrifice ourselves for an able-bodied character or non-disabled character. And we would always hate ourselves. And so I thought, okay, well, that's what's being reflected back on me, and that's what society expects of me, and that's how I feel, because I'm not seeing any alternatives. So for me, I really struggled, because I have spent a lot of time, you know, not around disabled people, like not around people with disabilities, whether that be chronic illness, invisible disabilities, or physical ones like mine. But I do think that, like, in not having that, you know, because I'm the only one in my immediate family in particular that has any sort of physical disability. So in seeing the portrayal of disability in pop culture, that shapes the way I saw myself. And because those were negative or exploitive, like the telethons that used to come on television, I really struggled in finding my own self-worth. And so in a weird way, the way that I found it was that, you know, right after Christmas in 2016, I just went into the bathroom and I didn't look my best. I really promise you I didn't. My hair was a mess. I had stinky breath, you know, the sleep drool, all of that. But I felt really cute for the first time. And I think it was because things were going well professionally. And I just looked in the mirror and I saw something that I hadn't seen before, and I had assumed it was going to go away. But for me, what it took was effort. And I tried every single day to say 4 things I liked about myself day and night until I believed them. Mm-hmm. And then I woke up in February, right before the hashtag, and I was like, you still feel really good. It's time to celebrate this. But mm-hmm. it absolutely wasn't easy then, and it's not easy now. I still have to remind myself, you know, that there's something worthy about me, or that there's multiple things worthy about me, rather, mm-hmm. every day. So it's like a continued process. There's no stopping. There's no end date. It's an everyday thing. Like, I started in 2016, but this is going to be me trying for the rest of my life to, mm-hmm. you know, live these words I'm speaking to you and to be kind to myself. Mm-hmm. On the days that I can't be, you know, my bubbly, happy, proud of myself, in love with myself self. So it's just about giving myself the space to be exactly who I am at all times, and try to make sure that that person doesn't become a person who, you know, is mean to herself anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that journey to self-love, and I went through a similar journey for myself, and it's a daily process, and it takes work. I think a lot of times we just think it's just going to happen overnight, that we're just going to love ourselves. We're going to be like, it's all perfect. And the reality is that we'll have good days, we'll have bad days, but if we're kind to ourselves, mm-hmm. we just accept that we are where we need to be, things will get better on those bad days.
Right.
And those bad days, these two shall pass. Like, it's just, it's going to pass. It's not going to always be this, yeah. that way.
Exactly. Like, it's an everyday process. And I feel like in knowing, for me at least, that I can't get through the bad days, it makes it easier now. Because once I got through them the first time and was able to really, truly love the person that I was looking at in the mirror, I feel like now I can get through any bad day. And because I know that they're there, and I know that I've coped with them before, I can use those same coping mechanisms to get through the new ones.
Mm-hmm. So you're a college
So it's author. All like a learning curve.
Yeah, it's a learning curve. That is so true. So you're a published author. What was your journey to get your first book published?
Well, it was a wild journey. So when the hashtag went viral in 2017, I had a bunch of literary agents reach out to me, and they wanted to work with me. And it's a wild thing to go from just being a freelance writer to mm-hmm. having literary agents like, hey, we'd love to work with you. So what I did was I set up phone calls with each of them, and I mm-hmm. narrowed it down to my final three. And then with my literary agent, Alex Later of Private Media Group, like, we just kind of clicked, and I felt like he really understood, you know, not only what I was trying to do for the first book, but what I was trying to do as a writer in my career mm-hmm. as an author as well. And so it's so funny because it went viral. And then a little bit after 2017, maybe it was in 2017, actually, I got my agent, and then we sold the book really quickly, which is very rare in publishing. Mm-hmm. And we just, so it was kind of like a really quick thing. It was like, we sat, did some emails, and we talked very deeply about the kind of work that I wanted to do, and like that I knew first, it was I believed first that I wanted to do fiction. That was going to be book one. Mm-hmm. But I think as time went on, I realized that the essay collection, which would soon be The Pretty One, was the collection that needed to come out first, because I think that a lot of people have been introduced to me through, you know, my freelance essays and articles. And so mm-hmm. I just wanted to do this first because I felt like it was a really good introduction to me and also to the work I want to do in the future. And I think that this book just explains, you know, where I'm at in my life. And it just gives people, hopefully, you know, we'll know on August 6th when it comes out, but hopefully it gives people the room to see themselves, even if they don't live the exact, you know, same experience that I do, but just a room to learn about other people and to maybe forgive themselves for their own instances of, you know, self-hatred and their own sort of self-inflicted trauma that they've you know, given themselves in the past 2 years of their life so far. And so I really wanted this book in particular to be the first thing that people read of mine, because I feel like it's a great explanation of who I am as a person and also who I am as a writer and journalist.
Yeah, I felt when I read it, I felt like I was talking to a friend. Like, the sense that I got was, like, I got to know you as a person, what your values were, but I also got to know you the fun stuff, like the cheesecake, the Sarah Dessen, the, you know, the New Kids in the Block. Mm-hmm. I think it was New Kids in the Block, or, like, you know, the different
Backstreet
things.
Backstreet Boys, but you were close.
Backstreet Boys, sorry. It was a boy band.
Yeah, right. It was close. And I like their stuff, too, so hey.
Yeah.
Win-win.
But it felt really fun to hear, like, you know, an overarching sense of yourself, you know, in the book,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just giving you bits and pieces and you'd be like, okay, I wish I could Google search and be like, what do I need to know more? I got a sense of full picture of who you are, which was really good.
Great. Because, I mean, that was the goal. I wanted people to be able to have access to these stories and to these things that I share in the book, but without feeling like they're being force-fed them or, you know, being yelled at about them. I wanted to be able to approach, you know, topics of accessibility and, you know, the fact that disabled people are murdered once a week by a family member or caretaker, and like these struggles that I've had as a Black disabled woman in the world. But I wanted to be able to approach them from a place of care and love and humor, because I think so much of my life has been like trying to find humor in the rougher parts of life and trying to make sure that people realize that I'm a fully realized human being and that I am not just my own pain and my own trauma. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to make sure that people got a full picture of who I am as a Black disabled woman, and the fact that like disabled people survive and we live to the end of books, and there's a disabled person at the end of this book who's alive. And so to be able to have written it and then to be able to talk about it and to let people know that like this is possible for you too, you don't have to hate yourself in a world that often tells you that you should. You can completely go against that grain and really, you know, embrace a life that's mm-hmm. worth living for you.
Yeah. So in this book, you don't shy away talking about representation, racism, ableism. I believe it was mm-hmm. a powerful statement that you're making and just being able to share and speak up. But why speaking up about these issues matters to you?
I think it's important because so often we don't think about these things. When most non-disabled people go into a room, they don't have to think about whether or not the railing on the stairs is broken, or the elevator is broken, or if there's places to sit down if they need a rest. And so for me, I just felt it was necessary to talk about it because it's part of my lived experience. And in order for me to tell these stories about the fun stuff, I had to also be honest about, you know, the things that still need work. And mm-hmm. and I really felt like these things in particular were things that I could tell people or talk to people about in an accessible way, and hopefully, you know, people don't feel too bombarded by them, because I wanted to, like I said, paint a full picture of the life that I live in. And that's part of it, is the ableism and the racism and the misogynoir, and how sometimes even the people that we love and the communities that we love in particular can sometimes hurt us just as much as the oppressors do. And I think that was a really important lesson that I learned in my life mm-hmm. later on. So I just felt like it was necessary stuff to tell, because without it, you wouldn't get the full picture of who I am as a person.
Yeah. And it's not just who you are as a person, it's like where we are in society. You know,
yes, exactly.
That we are 2019, it's like we need to start talking about those things because. Mm-hmm. We won't move forward if we don't confront it.
Right. Change won't happen unless we talk about what needs to be changed and then put that into action.
Yeah. So I love your honesty about friendships, because you shared the good ones, but also some of the ones that we regret. What have you learned from mm-hmm. your experience, you know, when it comes to your friendships?
just that they're very important to me. I think even in writing CCNBC, which is the essay about my friendships, it's just that, like, they're very important to me. And I think I honor platonic love so much in my life. Mm-hmm. And for me, friendships are sort of a safe place, because you can find people in the world who can love you for all that you are without a sort of obligation. And so to have that is like a gift, I think. To have it is a blessing, because you want to be able to move through the world knowing that someone somewhere in some corner of it has your back. And so I'm very lucky that I have multiple people in multiple corners who have mine. And I think that for me, talking about, you know, the big friendship that I've lost, it was just a reflection on the fact that, like, sometimes we can hurt people even in our efforts to hurt ourselves. And I think sometimes we have to atone for our past behaviors so that we can all the time, not even sometimes, we should always atone for our past behaviors so that we can be better people in the future. And so for me, in losing that friend, I felt it was necessary to talk about it and then to atone for that, but also to give them space. Mm-hmm. Because they don't owe me forgiveness, and they don't owe me that just because I write about them in the book. Mm-hmm. But what I owe them, though, is space for me, you know, to understand that I can't be for everyone. And even though I'm not that person anymore, that person that I hurt still doesn't have to forgive me just because they need to forgive myself. You know what I mean? So for me, I just felt like I wanted to be honest about, you know, the great friends that I have, but also the ones that I've lost, and just show people that, like, I'm not speaking to you about these things from a high horse. I'm speaking to you as a person who has experienced them and grown from them and learned from them. So that's kind of why I wanted specifically to talk about friendships, because I feel like we don't give them the same sort of weight or credit that we do romantic relationships.
Yeah, it's so powerful. I think when we look back at the friendships that we lost, or friendships that the relationships are just no longer work for us, you know, there's a lot of times it's just, you know, we just have to, just like you said, atone for past behavior, so you can actually, in the future, you can be a better friend, you can be a better person.
Right. Because I think otherwise we won't grow as individuals if we can't see what we've done to other people, you know, in group settings. And sometimes it's people that have loved us even when, you know, they didn't have to, or even when they shouldn't have. And so for me, I think losing that friend was like a lesson in how to treat, you know, my friends in the future, so that it's not the same result every time.
Yeah. What would you tell your younger self after everything that you know now?
I would tell her to relax, and that she's going to be someone who is worthy of loving herself one day, and that it takes time, but she's going to be someone that people care about, someone whose work people care about, and how it's not just about a romantic relationship. But even though, you know, she might not have that, she has platonic love and friends and family that really care deeply about her. And that's enough, too. That it's not just about whether or not some guy didn't ask you to prom, or whether or not you're skinny enough, or whether or not you're pretty enough, because the thing is, you are. And mm-hmm. there's going to be someone somewhere who sees that in you. So get ready to see it in yourself first, and that other person hopefully will come. But if not, you're going to be okay regardless.
Yeah, I love the whole idea, you know, and for a long time, I struggled with the whole romantic relationship, and I'd come to a place where I've been in acceptance about it. But it's, you know, I had to come from a place, I needed to love myself in order to be in a place of acceptance. Like, the right person is going to come when it comes. But I need to appreciate myself and love myself, because I wanted to attract someone
he's just as healthy in that way, as opposed to creating some kind of like drama-filled relationship, and like, you know, and that comes from a place of love. That's when it starts from self-love. The rest will work itself out, but yeah.
Right. And I think, too, I kind of hate, and I talk about this in the book, I hate the idea that people are like, okay, you won't have anybody until you love yourself, because I don't think it's that cut and dry. I think that what we should hope for is to love ourselves, but understand that, like I said, it's a journey. And so if you're not there yet, as long as you're trying, that doesn't mean that you're not deserving of love. And even if you aren't trying, it doesn't mean that you're not deserving of love. We shouldn't treat love as though it's this conditional thing that you have to check off these steps before mm-hmm. it can happen to you. But what we can do is try to enter relationships in a place of, you know, at best acceptance, so that we can, like you said, be drama free. And so you can enter a relationship or a situationship, whichever works for you, in a healthy place and ready to commit to another person, or and ready to commit to multiple people, and just ready to try to be somebody who can be with another person or people and feel good and not feel so self-conscious and so insecure.
Yeah, I think that's what it comes down to. And it's like it's going to happen when it's happened, but you just have to just mm-hmm. be patient about it. And then just being like taking it a day at a time, where it's like, you know, focus on you, focus on love that comes in different places, because love is abundant. It's not conditional. It's not just you have to do this thing in order to get XYZ. It's like, it's an abundance of love. Like, whether you have from friendships, family, pets, there's love comes from different places. And so romantic love is just another form of love. But you already have it. Yeah.
Exactly. See, you said exactly what I was trying to say with the book, is just that, like, love is the thing that keeps us sometimes when we can't keep ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we should celebrate it in all its forms, not just in the romantic.
Yeah. I love it. So now let's get to a round of book recommendations. This is an opportunity for you to share with our audience what they should read next.
Okay.
So what is your favorite genre?
I'm cheating. So my favorite genres are actually fiction and nonfiction. I do love poetry too, but my favorites are fiction and nonfiction.
Okay. What kind of fiction and what kind of nonfiction? Because those are two broad.
Right. I love, for fiction, I love romance so much. And I also love young adults, even though I'm kind of aging out of that demographic. I feel like I can still read it because I do whatever I want. but I love romance, and I love young adult stuff. I kind of stay away from like fantasy, although Daniel Jose Older, like, he does fantasy so well, and I love mm-hmm. it so much. So I'll read him, but, yeah, definitely in fiction, it's YA and romance for me.
I love it. So I am actually a huge romance reader, so we should definitely talk offline. I love YA, and I'm older than you, and I was like, you know, I feel like most adults read YA, you know, like YA, people who are in the teens,
right.
They may read some YA, but it's not as much as the adults who read the YA.
Right, and I feel like it's such a really good genre that people don't give it the credit it deserves. Sometimes I find that people are very, like, they like stick their nose up at the idea of YA. And I'm like, no, it's really good. Mm-hmm. And so is romance. And those are like my two favorites, because I feel like they're the underdogs of the literary world. Mm-hmm. And I'm always rooting for them.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. So who's your favorite author?
My favorite author, oh, this is so hard because, again, I want to cheat. I talk about Sarah Dessen very deeply in the book, and she was very formative of, you know, my high school and college years, and I still read her today because I feel like she just makes me want to stop what I'm doing and read, and she makes me want to be a better writer. Mm-hmm. And I love Roxane Gay, as Twitter and the world knows. she's just brilliant. She writes across genre, and like, she's brilliant at it all. And I think that there's so much power and magic in her work that I feel like we're very lucky to be reading it as we are and as she creates it. And then there's also Toni Morrison, who is just a legend. And everybody really loves, you know, all of her work. But I think that there's just something so magical to me about this person who creates these characters who are Black and beautiful, and they've experienced trauma and pain. But again, it's not all that they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I just feel like that's just so special, because I read and I read her work while, like, you know, I was still figuring myself out, and I was still trying to find things that moved me. And I feel like even her, I know she's only written like one short story, but even the short story really changed who I was as a person and a writer. And so those three are really, they really mean a lot to me, because I feel like they've given me the room to hope and the room to, you know, dream of something bigger, but also the room to learn more about people who sometimes look like me and sometimes don't, to learn more about people who have lived my experiences in some ways and some who have not.
So what are your top three favorite books of all time?
My top three. Okay. So I really love Dear Mr. Henshaw by Beverly Cleary. That book made me want to be a writer. Like, I try to read it at least once a year. I know that it's like a younger book, but I just loved it. And it really made me the writer I am today in many ways. And then I also love The Truth About Forever by Sarah Dessen. Mm-hmm. That I talk about that in the book. And I also love Just Listen. So, like, I'll read whatever she writes. I love all of her books. And then the book that I really, really was moved by was Freshwater by, I think it's Akweke Inezi.
Okay.
So those three books.
Love it.
I love them. Like, literally could not, like, once I was finished, especially with Freshwater, once I was finished with it, I didn't know what to do for 2 or 3 weeks. I just was like, I wish that I could forget everything and then reread it, you know, just to experience it one more time. Those three books, Freshwater, all of Sarah Dessen's books, because I am who I am, mm-hmm. and Dear Mr. Henshaw by Beverly Cleary.
I love it. What has been a book that you read this year that you love?
Oh my gosh, there are two, actually.
Yeah.
So there's The Wedding Party, yep, by Jasmine Guillory, and mm-hmm. then there is Red, White, and Royal Blue by Casey McQuiston. Those books just floored me. They were so smart and so funny, and the romance was fantastic. And Red, White, and Royal Blue tells the story of the American first son who falls in love with the Prince of Wales. And it's just so smart, and it's just so well done. And I think it just transports you to these places that Casey is writing about. And with The Wedding Party, that is about two of my favorite characters from Jasmine's other books, which are The Wedding Party and The Proposal. The Wedding Date and The Proposal. It's Theo, and I'm forgetting the other, forgetting her name. But thank you, yes, Theo and Maddie. So Theo and Maddie are like two people who supposedly hate each other, but then they, end up sleeping together, and, you know, chaos ensues in the best way. And I just think that Jasmine is such a smart writer in general, and that anybody looking to write, period, you know, to create books in any way should really be reading her work. Because whether you write in the romance genre or not, I think that she's absolutely a masterclass. I also read Seriously by Madeline Miller this year, and that was really, really, really good. Because I loved her book Song of Achilles. I loved it. I was obsessed in college. And I was, like, really excited to read it, and it did not disappoint. And then there's also the kiss quotient by Helen Hong.
Mm-hmm.
That's just mm-hmm. brilliant. So yeah, those, I'm cheating. I named like five or six, but those are just books that I absolutely adored and like
I feel that
everybody should be reading them. Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. I read The Kiss Quotient. I read The Wedding Party and Red, White, and Royal Will. I do own Cersei. And I have to say, they're awesome. They're really great books to read. They're a great introduction to romance. They're not, you know, as steamy as other romance novels can be. Although The Kiss mm-hmm. Quotient is fairly steamy, but they're really good books to read.
Right. It's like done really well. Mm-hmm. To the point where like it doesn't just feel like it's that and nothing else. It's like these authors take the time to really develop the characters that really make you fall in love with who they are and then how they are together. So it's really, I think, very smart. And that's why I do believe that like people should be reading romance regardless of what genre they want to write in, period, because it really is a masterclass in how certain people can take, you know, the idea of like, okay, we know that these two people are going to end up together. So it's about how they get there. I just feel like that it's not possible for everybody to do it, but it is, to me, imperative that writers read romance because it'll teach you so much about pacing and plot and how to get a reader, you know, really engrossed in your characters and to care enough to keep flipping the page.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to say, I love romance. I love that there's, even though there's sometimes it feels like there's a formula, there's something to be said about how authors bring their own personality, how they develop the characters, mm-hmm. how they develop the plot, that just gets so engaging that, you know, even yeah. if you just read a bunch of romance with the same trope, they're still so different from each other.
They are. They really are. And I think that's a testament to the ability to let, you know, otherwise marginalized people tell these stories. Because when we open up the literary world in particular to, you know, stories of people who are Black women and people who are in the LGBTQ community and people who are sometimes both or more than, we can really see the expansion of our imagination, and also we get really great stories out of it. I'm really excited at the prospect of seeing more from these authors and literally clamoring and waiting so impatiently for whatever it is they do next, because I absolutely cannot wait.
Yeah, I love it. So tell us where we can find you online.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram, both at Kia, K-E-A-H, underscore Maria. I'm on Facebook at The Kia Brown. And you can find my actual physical work at Kia Brown, that's KEAHBROWN.com. You can find it all there. There's stuff about the book. And usually when you catch me on Twitter, I'm tweeting about a TV show or a movie or cheesecake. And probably Paramore, who I'm obsessed with, and Demi Lovato too. So you'll get the gamut. So if you want to follow my work, you can do so there, but also it's on my website and everything too.
I love it. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. This was such a great conversation. I'm really so excited. I love the podcast.
Thank you, Kia, for a great interview. For show notes and a list of books mentioned in this podcast, please visit whattoreadnextblog.com. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back next week with another author interview. Have a great week.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whattoreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.